This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. More than four decades after the Greensboro massacre, the city formally apologizes for its role and the role of the police. On November 3, 1979, a caravan of Ku Klux Klansmen and American Nazi Party members pulled out weapons and killed five people protesting at an anti-Klan march in Greensboro. 10 people were injured, and the police were nowhere to be found, even though they knew a violent attack was coming. The Greensboro City Council passed a resolution last night with a 7-2 vote that included both a formal apology and details on a new annual scholarship program in memory of the five victims. Reverend Nelson Johnson joins me now. He's the executive director of the Beloved Community Center in Greensboro and a survivor of the massacre. Reverend Johnson, welcome back.
Thank you.
And congratulations. What was your reaction when you heard the news last night?
Well, I was very pleased and very happy that the city council made the decision. I was listening, paid careful attention to those who disagreed. But overall, we're very, very happy with that outcome.
This resolution has been in the works for a while, and there have been other apologies of sorts before this. What makes this one different?
Well, let me say this about apologies in general. I think they have to do three things. They have to cite clearly what was done wrong. I think they have some responsibility to say, to the best of their understanding, why it was done wrong. And thirdly, I think they have to set out what might be some of the correctives. None of the ones that preceded this did either of those. It just said, we're sorry or we regret. And it didn't say what you're apologizing for in any particular way. And it didn't say what you were going to do about it in any substantial way. So I think the apology that happened last night addressed, although not as thoroughly as it might have, but it addressed each of those three components of what I think is necessary for an apology to be reasonably authentic.
As we said, this has been in the works for quite a while, and it's worked its way up to this point. Talk about the work that you and others had to do to make this resolution a reality.
Well, this particular resolution emerged out of the four of us who remained in Greensboro, who were a part of the organization in 1979. And we wrote a 17-page paper that detailed each one of these 7 points and submitted it to the city in 2017, didn't hear from them, wrote them again in 2019, and asked the Pulpit Forum to intercede with us and on our behalf. They did, and we met with small groups of city council persons from December through early March. At that point, COVID-19 set in, and future meetings were virtual and limited. But it was an elongated process that gave us the opportunity to look them in the face and to talk clearly, plainly about what actually happened, because so many distortions and cover stories were put out, it was easy to get confused.
And this is the first time the city really acknowledged the role of the city and the police in the violence that took those five lives. What does that acknowledgement mean to this, to your community?
Well, I think it is what the community basically already knew, at least a portion of the community. But it affirms that the city leadership is on board with the culture in the police department that caused this to happen. That's number one. Number two, it positions the city to play an even more important role in this period where there's unprecedented exposure of law enforcement complicity with violent white supremacy groups and other organizations. And much of this flows from the highest level of government. Unless cities, local cities, can stand up and speak the truth it's unlikely that this will come primarily from the top down. So we've been arguing that we need the city to speak its truth as much as we needed Montgomery in 1956. And we think that Greensboro made a significant step in that direction last night.
Now that that step has been taken, the acknowledgement has been made, often a very difficult step for anybody in power to do, do you expect the kind of reforms that you suggested can only follow once the truth has been told? The truth is told, do you expect the reforms to follow?
I do expect some reforms to follow, but I want to back up for just a second and say that the primary reason why the city did what it did was because of the collective voice of the people. So we named this a people's victory that was authenticated in some sense by the city council. We would not want to mislead people to think that the city council was clamoring to get this done. They got it done because the people actually insisted on it. I think that's the way other things are going to get done. I think that other reforms that are necessary, some of which they already have in the hopper and had on the schedule for last night, but put it off last night because I think it was just too much to deal with on one night.
The resolution also establishes a scholarship fund. Tell us a little about that.
Oh, that's one of the most significant things I think this resolution did. When I raised that the third component is, what is it that you're going to do about this? To have five students from a local predominantly black high school compete over whether it be through the written word or through some other artistic form, their view of what needs to get done to make progress on systemic racism and poverty. That's very exciting. And to present it at the largest gathering that the city actually convened, which will be the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday breakfast. There's usually somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 people at a breakfast, and the students will be making their presentations at this gathering. All of this not only keeps the issue before the city, but for the first time, it calls the name of the five people who were killed in a respectful and meaningful way.
Many years ago, you and others in the community organized a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to investigate this more deeply. The city refused to participate. Is it time to reopen that process? Do you think this would be a good time to try it again?
Well, I think that the work of the truth process in 2004 and to 2006 did a good job. Right now, the nation needs a truth process because there's similarities, eerily similarities to the mood in Greensboro in 1979 that is now reflected in 2020 in the whole nation. We're a culture of falsehood, denial, confusion, doublespeak has overtaken the nation. And we think that something like a truth process or a truth process is needed. We've been in discussion for 6 to 8 weeks with a network of people who are working on that. And we think that perhaps Greensboro couldn't, now that this is authenticated by the city council, although it was authenticated by the public earlier on, could be a source of energy and inspiration to help a national process come into being. I think that Greensboro might have a second iteration of the truth process, but in alignment with some greater national process that I think is now possible.
In addition to that, where else would you like to see Greensboro go from here?
Well, as we say in the religious sector, higher heights and deeper depths. I think there's a good bit of work to be done, one, on the police culture question itself. But this question is, as it has been historically, is inextricably bound up with other social realities. The resolution mentioned a living wage, but that's partly true. But right now, the contracts that the business, that minority businesses get, is very, very small. It's somewhere between 1.5% and 2% of the contracts that the city let. That's a whole arena that has to be penetrated. The second thing is, it seems to me that we need to develop ways that Black, brown, and Asian people are more fully acknowledged, and the discriminations inherent in a culture are drawn to the surface. And so these are areas that I think that are open to the city. But the economic sphere is a very, very important one, that we have to make progress there. Otherwise, it makes other kind of progress quite limited in one respect.
Reverend Nelson Johnson, Executive Director of the Beloved Community Center and a survivor of the Greensboro Massacre, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Frank, and congratulations on your retirement. Enjoy that part of your life.
Thank you so much. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.